to talk to the animals. It's incredible chatting with a chimp and chimpanzee. To sit and natter with a tiger, chatter with a cheetah, that's a neat achievement, you'll agree. If I could talk to the animals, learn their languages, I would be the greatest man on earth. If I could only find a teacher, I would reach each creepy creature, then think what Scurvy's empire would be worth. I can converse in polar bear and python. Yeah, he can curse in fluent kangaroo. If people ask me, can you speak rhinoceros? I say, of course, rhinoceros. And do. If I controlled our four-legged friends and all the universe, what a wicked place the world would be. But until then, only Doolittle talks with the animals. He grunts and he squeaks and he squawks with those animals. And they can talk to me.
Re'ei anochi no sein lifneichem hayom biracha. Uklala. See that today I give to you, or before you, this day, a blessing and curse. Et habaracha asher tishmeu el mitzvos Adonai Eloheichem asher anochi mitzava esechem hayom. The blessing that you will listen to all of the mitzvot of God that I am commanding you this day, says Moshe to the people. V'hakilala im lo tishmeu el mitzvos Adonai Eloheichem v'sartem min haderech asher anochi mitzaveseichem hayom laleches acharei Elohim acherim asher lo yedatem, and the curse, if you will not listen to the mitzvot of God and turn away from his path that I am commanding you this day, to a path following pagan gods which you do not know. I'll say now the significance of these opening verses. First of all, the blessing and the curse were to be given, as is described in the continuation of Parshat Re'eh. When Yehoshua brings the people in, there's a ceremony with Har Gerizim and Har Eval. Later in the Torah, we get more detail as to how the brachot and the klalot, the blessings and curses, are presented. So it's interesting that you have it here, and you have it later in the Torah, and you also have it in the book of Yehoshua, the book of Joshua. Second thing to note is the definitions are not balanced. The blessing, when you listen to God. The curse, if you don't listen. And that's spelled out in the Torah. Let's just say that's hinted to in the Torah, that the foregone conclusion is the recommendation by God, which is supported later in the Torah, of choosing good and choosing life, even though we have free will and we are presented with a free choice. It's a free choice, but with consequences. You know, I always get into discussions with people, and they say, you mean I have a choice of keeping Shabbos or not keeping Shabbat? And I said, yes, the choice is yours, but there are consequences. Keeping Shabbat is fulfilling what God wants of the Jew, and desecrating Shabbat is the opposite of fulfilling what God wants. And he has already expressed to us, and will continue later in the book of Devarim, to present us with the concept of reward and punishment. So yes, you have a free choice. Would you like to put your hand on a hot stove or have an ice cream? You put your hand on a hot stove, you're exercising your free choice stupidly, and you're going to get burned. And you can't say, why did I get burned? God gave me a free choice. Yes, but he gave a recommendation of which path to choose. That's the idea of free choice and free will. We'll get back to more of that in a while. The opening music, I'll wait. Not a lot, but I'll wait. OU Israel presents... Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Re'eh, which is also Shabbat Mevorachim Chodesh Elul. Recording and first availability. Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 25th day of Menachem of 5777, corresponding this year to August 17th. And that's the story. We have Shabbat coming up, Parshat Re'eh. Torah Tidbits was a little unusual this week, or yearly unusual, with 1 week that we set aside to take vacations, which is preceded by a double issue, which almost makes the vacations not worth it. Although I must say, we were with one of our children and family in Herzliya, and it was very nice. Little sun, beach, quiet, resting, and playing a lot of games. Anyway, back to the show. The opening music was from Dr. Doolittle, Talk to the Animals, and I chose that, as I think I have in the past, on Parshat Re'eh, because one of the topics in Parshat Re'eh are the kosher and non-kosher animals, the kosher and non-kosher fish, the kosher and non-kosher birds, and the kosher and non-kosher creepy crawlers. And everything that falls in between belongs to one of those categories. So that's that. Where to begin? I'll tell you where to begin. The Book of Devarim, as I introduced 3 weeks ago, contains the farewell address of Moshe Rabbeinu to the Jewish people, the new generation preparing to cross the Jordan River and enter the land of Israel. And the Vilna Gaon famously subdivides the book into three sections, with full respect and admiration for the Vilna Gaon. I vary that a little to keep it to Sedra by Sedra, and therefore it turns out that the Sedras of Devarim, Vo'et Hanan, and Akev have relatively few mitzvot out of the 613. The purpose of that first portion of Moshe's talk to the people was to review the 40-year but filled history of the Jewish people in their infancy, as well as setting down the principles and foundation of Judaism, including the Ten Commandments, again, the Shema, first part, the second part, the concept of benching after a meal, which many commentaries also learn from there, the mitzvah to bless God for Torah learning and practice, and all other brachot, the ones for food we eat and sights we see and smells we smell, and mitzvot which we perform, and prayers which we say, all come on a rabbinic level from the mitzvah to bless God. We're not going to get into that now. That belongs to last week's parsha of Akev. What you then have now, and I picture in my mind's eye in a fantasy way, Moshe Rabbeinu wrapping up the Devarim V'Adchanan Akev part of his talk. And he says, tomorrow when you come, make sure you bring your notebooks, tablets, laptops, papyrus that you brought with you from Egypt, writing tools or whatever, and be prepared to take notes, because in Re'e, followed by Shofetim, followed by Ki Teitzei, we have the largest number of mitzvot in the Torah in any three consecutive setters, a total of 170. Re'e has 55. That's third in the all-time mitzvah list. Second would be Emor in the book of Vayikra. And the first place goes to Ki Teitzei that I just mentioned with 74 mitzvot. And Shoftim only comes in at number 6 with 41 mitzvot. But a total of 170 mitzvot. And the feeling is that Moshe Rabbeinu is getting closer to the time where he will leave this world, and he wants to make sure the people are adequately prepared for their Torah life when they enter Israel. So you have a lot of that. As I mentioned, you also have the food we're allowed to eat, the animals we're allowed to eat, and in that context, it's important to know that animals are not just used for sacrificial offerings in the Mishkan or the Mikdash, but they also are to serve our palates as well. But we'll get there. Before we continue, I would like to put on a piece of music. Nice time of the year for that. And when I was looking for a song through my computer files, I found an album by Yonatan Sheinfeld, which had a song, Kulanu Yachad, All of Us Together. I like the song. It's a nice, peppy song. The words come from two different places, one in Davening, which speaks of the people of Israel in the aftermath of crossing the sea. Yachad, kulam, hodu, v'himlichu, v'yamru, everyone said together, Hashem yimloch li'olam v'ed, God will be king forever and ever. And there's also Yachad Shivtei Yisrael, which comes from the Torah, in Parshat V'zot HaBaracha, Vayhi Bishur Melech. And even though there's no direct connection to Parshat Re'eh, I realize that this generation that the whole book of Devarim is talking to, poised on the threshold of Eretz Yisrael, is about as united as we had been since that moment of arrival at Mount Sinai, where the Torah uses the singular of Vayichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ehar, and Rashi's comment, Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, like one person with one heart. And then there were lots of problems from that time onward, and one gets the sense here that things are settling down, and once again there is a sense of Jewish unity, which unfortunately does not stick around for too long. But in honor of that, you have Kulanu Yachad, We're All Together, by Yonatan Sheinfeld.
Yachad Kulanu Yachad. יחד כולם אוי דו והמליכו ויומו אוי דו והמליכו ויומו יחד כולם אוי דו והמליכו ויומו אוי דו והמליכו ויומו יחד כולם אוי דו והמליכו ויומו אוי דו והמליכו ויומו
Seinfeld with Yachad. Okay, Ray, as I mentioned, has 55 of the 613 mitzvot. That's a very sizable share. Not going to go into all of them, but I want to present to you 8 mitzvot in a run, and I'll tell you when I finish why I'm doing that. They are the prohibition against eating the second tithe of grain outside Jerusalem. Backtrack and give you the background here. A person who raises crops, gathers them together at the usual harvest time, and he takes approximately 2% off of his whole amount and designates them as teruma for a kohen. He puts it in a bag, he marks it with a T, or a tav, and he puts it aside. He does not need to run out right away and give it to a kohen. He can wait till his cousin, Moish Cohen, is coming to visit and give it to him, as long as he separates it from the rest of the produce. He then takes 10% of what remains and designates that for a levy. That is called ma'aser Rishon, first tithe. It's technically a little less than a tithe because he already took off the about 2%, but that's the portion that goes to Levium. He can give it to a Levi or to a bunch of Levium, whether he knows them or not, whether they're related. His brother-in-law could be a Levi, his cousin, his brother's in-law, whatever. Or he searches and finds a Levi to give it to. Then, in the first, second, fourth, and fifth year of a Shemitah cycle, he takes another tithe, and he designates that as Ma'aser Sheni, the second tithe. Now, before I continue on the second tithe, since that's the topic that I just mentioned, in the third year and the sixth year of a Shemitah cycle, he takes a tithe after the portion that goes to a Levi. This time it's called Ma'aser Oni, and it's to be given to poor people. Does not count as charity, as tzedakah. That's an obligation in addition to this requirement of Ma'aser Oni. So now back to Ma'aser Sheni, the second tithe. Second tithe does not get given to anyone else. It belongs to the producer, but it is holy. It is sacred and can only be eaten in Yerushalayim. Or it could be redeemed, but let's not get into that now. Let's talk about a person with a modest grape produce, and he takes one-tenth of that after the portion for the Levi, which is after the portion for the Kohen, and he designates it as Ma'aser Sheni. It is sacred. He brings it to Yerushalayim, not immediately, necessarily, but the next time his family goes to Yerushalayim, usually at one of the Shalosh Regalim coming up, and he drinks it in Yerushalayim in a state of ritual purity. No details at the moment. So, again, here's the list, starting with the prohibition against eating the second tithe of grain outside Jerusalem. My mistake to use wine as an example. That's the next one, the prohibition against consuming the second tithe of wine outside Jerusalem. And the third one, the prohibition against consuming the second tithe of olive oil outside Jerusalem. Now, even though these three prohibitions could have been said or counted as one, the people who counted mitzvot based on the wording in the pasuk and their feel for how mitzvot should be counted, counted these as separate commands. Let me digress, not really, for a moment, and mention that well-known Mishnah that is used to finish off every chapter in Pirkei Avot that comes from Masechet Makot, that is used in many, many shuls to end a Dvar Torah between Mincha and Ma'ariv, for example, and be able to say a Kaddish Derabbanan. Rabbi Hananya ben Akashia says, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu lezakot et Yisrael, God wanted to merit the Jewish people, lefichach, hirba lahem Torah u'mitzvot. Therefore, he heaped upon us Torah and mitzvot. Not just gave us Torah and mitzvot, but heaped mitzvot upon us. This increases the reward for observance and increases the punishment for disregard. But again, ponder that, but let's not get lost in that topic. Continuing this list, which I mentioned has eight mitzvot in it. The prohibition against eating an unblemished firstborn animal outside Jerusalem. So now the background for this. Not a producer of grain or wine or oil, but now we're talking about a sheep owner or a cow owner or a goat owner. Let's use the example of sheep. A person has a flock of sheep. He owns them. And one of his female sheep, known in English as a ewe, E-W-E, in Hebrew, Rachel. That's the meaning of the name Rachel, Rachel. He has a Rachel who is expecting her first time. And the blessed event comes around, and it's a boy. That lamb, male lamb, the first issue of his mother's womb, must be taken care of for 30 days. It is sacred at birth. Must be taken at 30 days and given to the Kohen of your choice. He then is obligated, if it is unblemished, of bringing it as an offering in the Beit HaMikdash within its first year. So you presented it on time, 30 days old. You tell the Kohen, here's a 30-day-old firstborn to its mother sheep. And the Kohen makes a choice. He goes now and brings it as a korban in the Beit HaMikdash. And he has a little lamb. He wants to raise it without benefiting from it for the balance of the year. He could bring an older, less than 1 year, lamb as an offering. His choice when to bring it. But it must be eaten only in Yerushalayim and with tahara, ritual purity. So here was the prohibition against eating an unblemished firstborn animal, which goes on the Mizbeach, on the altar, outside of Jerusalem. Next, not to eat of a chatat or an asham outside the Beit HaMikdash. Background. A korban chatat, a sin offering or a guilt offering, that is brought in the Beit HaMikdash by an individual. Parts of it go on the Mizbeach, on the altar, and parts go to the Kohanim on duty to eat within, not just Jerusalem, but within the temple precinct. So there is a prohibition of eating the meat of a chatat outside the Beit HaMikdash. Just hypothetically, a Kohen gets a very nice portion, the favorite part that he likes, and he would like to bring it home to his family, and he inadvertently does. I hope it would not be intentional. That is prohibited, to eat the meat of a chatat or an asham outside the Beit HaMikdash. Next, not to eat the flesh of an olah, a burnt offering. Background. There are korbanot that Kohanim get parts to eat, and there are korbanot that are totally consumed on the fires of the altar. An olah is called a burnt offering, and only the skin, the pelt, is given as a gift to a Kohen. The rest of the animal is consumed by the fire. A Kohen is not allowed to eat it. So the prohibition is to eat the flesh of an olah, which is not allowed. And then you have not to eat of korbanot of lesser holiness before their blood is sprinkled on the Mizbeach. Take that just the way it sounds, without my explaining that one. And one more, the Kohanim should not eat bikurim before they are set down in the Azara, the Beit HaMikdash courtyard. Let me explain that one. First fruits are brought by people from all over the country, anytime from Shavuot till Sukkot, preferably, and till Hanukkah if you didn't get a chance to bring it earlier. And they are to be given as a gift to the Kohen on duty. He must take that basket of fruit that you bring, and you recite something that goes with it, and he places it next to the Mizbeach. It is an offering officially to God, but the Kohen gets to take it home. It's Kodesh. It has to be eaten under certain circumstances. And he's not allowed to eat from it before it had been placed down next to the altar's ramp in the Beit HaMikdash. So all of these eight mitzvot are prohibitions. They all involve, I mean, their common feature is eating something that you're not allowed to eat, where it could be outside of Yerushalayim, if that's where you're supposed to eat it. It could be outside the Beit HaMikdash, if that's where you're supposed to eat it. It could be eating it at all, if you're not supposed to eat it, and eating it before the blood is sprinkled on the Mizbeach of certain korbanot, like Shlamim, and not to eat Bikurim before they are set down in the courtyard of the Beit HaMikdash. Why did I go through all of these? Because I am fascinated by the fact that all of them, every single one of those eight, come from the same verse. And you need Torah Sheva Al Peh, the oral Torah, to explain them all. Some of them are in the written words. Lo tuchal le'echol bisharecha, masar degoncha v'tiroshcha v'yitzarecha, uvechorot b'karcha v'tzonecha, v'chol nidarecha, asher tidor v'nidvotecha, utrumat yadecha. Some of those mitzvot are clear from the wording of this verse, and some are only taught to us by oral law, but all eight of them come from the same verse. There is no verse in the Torah besides this one that has eight mitzvot, or even seven, or even six. I think five is the next one, which is also unusual. And that's why I have always called this pasuk, which is chapter 12, verse 17, in the book of Devarim, the Nolan Ryan pasuk. Nolan Ryan was a baseball pitcher who holds the record in all-time Major League Baseball of pitching seven no-hitters. The closest anyone else has come has been four, Sandy Koufax. And then you've got a bunch with threes and more with twos, and then more commonly, pitchers that have pitched a single no-hitter in their career. It is not an easy thing to do. And to have pitched seven no-hitters in a career, I decided to borrow that concept for the pasuk. That is by far the largest number of mitzvot of any single verse, of which there are 5,846, if I'm not mixing up the digits, verses. This one has eight out of the 613 mitzvot. And while I'm mentioning this, I'm wondering if anyone cares to write to me at tt@ou.org and comment as to whether you find it irreverent and disrespectful in any way to dub a verse in the Torah with eight mitzvot the Nolan Ryan verse. And I'll tell you why I'm asking. And I'd like to hear from people not only who might object to it and think it's disrespectful, which I don't, otherwise I wouldn't have done it, but I'd like to hear from people who say, what are you talking about? It's a nice, cute analogy kind of thing. Because not too long ago, Parshat Matot Maseh, to be specific, I had in the printed version of Torah Tidbits, I used the M&M's candy logo, where the M and M stood for Matot and Maseh, and the S, the plural of M&M, M&M's, the S stood for the second Shabbat of Puranuta, the second tragic Haftorahs that we read during the 3 weeks. And most of the feedback I got from that was very cute to have used the M&M logo. I did get an email from someone who said his heart is pained by the disrespect to Parshiot Matot and Maseh when I used the logo of a candy to represent them on Torah Tidbits. I wrote back to the guy. He wrote back once. I wrote a second time. He never answered me. I invited him to call me on the phone. And it was a little bit annoying, but my first reaction sort of is get a life, you know. There's nothing wrong at all. It was not meant at all disrespectful. And M&M's happens to have an OU when it comes from the States. So that fit in because it was an OU emblem from the Israel Center right next to the M&M's logo, even though we don't use the same logo anymore as Kashrut, it's still there. Anyway, that's it. I'd like to play another song, and then we'll talk more. Okay, here's my choice. I must have played it before. It's one of my all-time favorites. It's a slow song this time, also from Yonatan Sheinfeld, or Sheinfeld, as the case may be. I never heard it pronounced. I've only read it. Excuse me. Let me give you the background to the words. Pasuk in Ha'azinu, which poetically describes many things about God. The pasuk is Kinesher Ya'ir Kino, Algozolov Yerachef, Yifros Kenafav Yikachehu, Yisaehu Al Evrato. Description of God in a simile to the protection of an eagle of its eaglets, if that's the right word for it, its young. Here the description is, he was like an eagle arousing its nest, hovering over its young, spreading its wings and taking them, carrying them on its pinions. That image is borrowed in the Siddur for the passage, meditation, whatever you want to call it, before putting on a talit gadol. A lot of people don't say these passages, but they are mood setters for the performance of a mitzvah. And the wording here is va'al yedei mitzvah tzitzit, and by the mitzvah of tzitzit, tinatzel nafshi v'ruchi v'nishmati u'tfilati min hachitzonim. Through the commandment of tzitzit, may my life force, spirit, soul, and prayer be rescued from external forces. Then it continues. V'hatalit yifros kinafav alehem, the talis, which I am about to put on, should spread its wings over them, v'yatzilem, and save them and protect them, kinesher yair kino. There's the quote of that pasuk in Ha'azinu. Al gozalav yirachef. The song cannibalizes that a little bit, and it does not mention its context of the mitzvah of tzitzit, but does speak of tinatzel nafshi and the kinesher yair kino. It's a beautiful song. A very talented singer, Yonatan Sheinfeld, with Tinatzel Nafshi.
Tinatzel Nafshi, Veruchi Venishmati. ותפילתי מן החיצונים תנצל נפשי רוחי ונשמתי ותפילתי מן החיצונים ותפילה Shmati, utfilati. תינצל נפשי ברוכי ונשמעתי
take a look now at a couple of other mitzvot, some of which are in Re'eh, and take them as a group. I find that when there are seders with 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 mitzvot even, you could look at them separately. When there are so many, it's more, I feel, more constructive and instructive and beneficial to take a look at groups of mitzvot. We have a prohibition in Parshat Re'eh against eating the meat of an animal before it is killed, limb from a living animal, Eiver min hachai. Eiver min hachai is not only one of 613 mitzvot that Jews are obligated to follow, it is one of the Sheva mitzvot b'nei Noach, the seven Noahide laws, which we believe all people in the world are obligated to follow, one of the seven basic laws of all human beings. Now, just to I call it a digression, but it's not. We have a video on the seven Noahide laws, and one of the main personalities that featured there is a fellow named Wendell Jones. He was a real-life archaeologist upon whose character, or from whose character, was drawn the personality of Indiana Jones. He was interviewed. He was a true Ben Noach, a Noahide, a non-Jew who accepted upon himself to study and then to practice the seven Noahide laws, not just that way, but L'shem Hashem Elokei Yisrael, for the sake of the God of Israel. And that's a true Ben Noach. And on the interview, he said, you know, all of them made sense to him. Idolatry, turning one away from God. Blasphemy, turning one away from God. Murder, adultery and incest, stealing, setting up courts of law, all made sense to him as to why they should be universal laws. Eiver min hachai, when he was first taught it, limb from a living animal, he could not wrap his mind around why that was on the list, because who does such a disgusting thing? as eat limb from an animal before it's killed. And then he remembered something. He remembered his youth in cattle country of Texas, where they had the annual roundup of steers, which were young calves that were then castrated, and a castrated calf becomes a steer, more docile than a regular bull, and meat more tender, and they're raised basically for beef. So he describes how the cooks and the chefs from the different ranches and herd owners would compete at these annual roundups and branding, including a competition of how you prepare a dish made from the testicles of calves. And he said, before I knew anything about Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, I participated in this, and I'll tell you something, it was delicious. But it hit him that that is exactly Eiver Min HaChai, limb from a living animal, which is not just forbidden by a Jew to a Jew, but for all people. Anyway, back on track. Eiver Min HaChai, you can't eat the meat from an animal until it's dead. Second, and this is for Jews only, you cannot eat limb from an animal that died by any other method than ritual slaughter. If an animal dropped dead, was killed by a car, was shot by a bullet, was electrocuted on a wire fence, and died, it is forbidden for us to eat from such an animal. The animal is called nivela, and so look at what you have here so far. You can't take limb from a living animal. You can't even take it from a dead animal unless that has been properly slaughtered. Third is what's called trefa, and the word treif became genetic for non-kosher, but specifically trefa means a torn animal. They were referring to, let's say, a sheep that got attacked by a wolf. The shepherd managed to chase away the wolf, and here was a sheep dying from its wounds from the attack. The shepherd, being a fine religious Jew, wants to slaughter it before it dies so that it will die by ritual slaughter and be permitted. No, it isn't. Because an animal that is towards death, even if you give it ritual slaughter, is considered off limits for Jews as a trefa. The extension of this, shouldn't really call it extension, a different application of this prohibition, is if after regular slaughter of a seemingly healthy animal, there are things that must be inspected internally, most notably the lungs, and if the inspector finds certain kinds of blemishes, it renders the animal a trefa, and even though the ritual slaughter was done properly, it's not allowed to be eaten by a Jew. So look what you have first. Actually, what you have first, which I didn't mention, is God's permission to eat the meat of certain animals. In fact, Parshat Re'eh is one of the two locations in the Torah, the other being Shemini, which tell us these are the animals you may eat and these are the animals you may not eat. And when it comes to mammals, we're talking about chewing of the cud and split hoof. So we have permission to eat animals, which was given all the way back to Noah when he came out of the Teva, the Ark. permission to eat an animal, prohibition against eating limb from a living animal, which automatically requires the animal to be killed first, and for non-Jews that is sufficient, and then the additional prohibitions of nevela, an animal that died without ritual slaughter, a trefa, an animal that was dying and was given regular traditional ritual slaughter, also off limits, and the only thing therefore left that would permit the meat of certain animals onto our tables and on in our diets is ritual slaughter. So by default, ritual slaughter becomes a requirement if a person wants to eat meat. Here is an animal. What is it? A sheep? Okay, we're allowed to eat sheep. Here it is healthy. Shechita, ritual slaughter, removal of blood vessels and blood and koshering. And finally, I can take a lamb chop or a piece of the sheep, the mutton, and prepare it to eat and eat it. So with a prohibition of these are the animals you're not allowed to eat, and the prohibition of Eiver Min HaChai, and the prohibition of Nevela, and the prohibition of Trefa, again I say, by default, only ritual slaughter can allow us to eat from certain animals. And yet, guess what? In Parshat Re'eh is a mitzvat aseh, a positive command to perform ritual slaughter on an animal that you would like to eat from. Now, this is not considered an obligatory mitzvah. You don't have to go out and slaughter an animal. But if you want to eat an animal, somebody competent has to, and qualified, has to perform the mitzvah of shechita on such an animal. Now, shechita then becomes a technically unnecessary mitzvah because, as I said before, it is the default procedure if you want to eat meat. And yet, the Torah elevated shechita to a level of a mitzvah where the shochet recites the blessing, Asher Kiddishanu B'mitzvotav, God who sanctified us with his mitzvot, V'tzivanu Al HaShechita, and commanded us on shechita. It puts a different perspective on eating meat. I don't know if I want to go further on that, but it also fits into the Mishnah of Rabbi Hananiah ben Akashi, which I mentioned before, of heaping upon us mitzvot. You have to slaughter an animal if you want to eat it. Mitzvah, that's something special in my book. Let's have one more song, then we'll discuss a few things in Parshat Re'eh, not do it justice, but finish up. Okay, here's another Yonatan Scheinfeld song from a different album, but still his song. And it's called Shira B'Simcha, Singing with Joy. Part of the words come from the Shacharit, right before the Amidah, where, and also from Ayrev, where it mentions that Moshe uvnei Yisrael, Lecha anu shira b'simcha rabah. Moshe and the children of Israel offered you joyous song in thanks for successfully crossing through the Dead Sea, the Red Sea, or the Reed Sea. So here it is.
Shiro, 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 Shiro,
Okay, let me wrap up with one other area of mitzvah. As I mentioned earlier, in Parshat Shemini and in Parshat Re'eh are the two locations in the Torah which discuss kosher mammals, kosher fish, kosher birds, or non-kosher, and creepy crawlers. Now, when it comes to, just to mention an interesting difference, which I don't have an explanation for, if anyone does, let me know. In Parshat Shemini, in mammals, it mentions kudzures and split hooves as the two signs of kosher mammal. Does not mention any kosher mammals there, just the signs that determine whether an animal is kosher. And then it goes on to describe four animals who have one of the signs but not the other, and they are the camel, the arnevet, the shafan, and the pig. The two I left untranslated because their translations are a little iffy, and the pig and the camel kind of clear. In any event, in Parshat Re'eh, this week's Sedra, we have not only those same four animals that we're not allowed to eat, the mammals, which are just, you know, chosen from the list of all that don't have either of the signs, but whether it has one sign or the other sign or neither sign, the animal can't be eaten. So those are the four that are actually mentioned by name. And in addition, there are 10 animals that are kosher. Three domesticated farm animals known as behema tohura. They are the cow, goat, and sheep. And then chayat tohura, the kosher non-domesticated animals. Wild animals is not really a great translation for it, but it refers to non-domesticated animals like deer and antelope and various other water buffalo and bison, giraffe, etc., without getting into it. Now, in addition to prohibitions of the animals that you're not allowed to eat, comes a positive command that seems to say you shall eat of these animals, which is not what it really means, because we are not required to eat meat. It's just, as I mentioned earlier, if you want to eat meat, then there are rules and regulations that have to be followed. So how do we understand, and these are the animals you shall eat? The explanation given by those who count mitzvot and by the Talmud itself is that one must check the signs of a kosher animal before he eats them. That's a positive command. So picture the following scenario. A guy is down by the lake fishing, and he catches a fish. It's a nice size. He keeps it, and he brought his fish barbecue grill, and he prepares the fish, and he grills it, little lemon, touch of spice, and it's delicious. He's wrapping up and closing up, and a friend of his passes by and says, "How'd your fishing go today?" He said, "I caught this delicious fish. I actually just finished it. Too bad you weren't here earlier. I would have given you some of it." He says, "What kind was it?" And the guy says, "I don't know." He says, "Did you at least check that it was kosher?" The guy went, "Oops," and opened his garbage bag that he had just sealed and rummaged around delicately till he found a piece of the fish's skin and verified that it had acceptable scales, and said, "Phew." I don't know how to spell "phew." Oops, I could spell, but not "phew." And he says, "Yes, it's kosher." That guy did not violate any prohibition in the Torah, but he also didn't fulfill the command of the Torah to check before you eat. Now, this has an important offshoot, and that is checking. I'm not claiming that this is part of the Torah's mitzvah, but it is certainly within the spirit of the mitzvah to check restaurants before you go in to eat there, to check the labels on products before you buy them and consume them, I would say there are many Jews who keep kosher who are not meticulous at checking. And it's complicated. Now, again, I'm not claiming this is the same as checking a fish for scales and fins. But I am saying that is certainly within the spirit of this positive command to check before you eat, to make sure that there is a reputable hashgacha supervision on a product. Just talking the other day to some people about the same product made in two different plants. One plant has supervision, the other doesn't. So the labels are identical except for a tiny OU, and buyer beware. You have to know. I'm not happy with the situation. I think it should be that if a product has an OU from somebody, then there can't be a non-acceptable one that looks the same. But it does. And that happens many times. And it is our obligation to check and recheck, and that includes a restaurant. I was here a month ago. It had a certificate of kashrut. Well, guess what? It lost its certificate of kashrut. Or it's outdated and hasn't gotten a new one. Or there's a reason for it's not getting a new one. So you have to check these things, and that's part of the spirit of that mitzvah. Re'eh, chock full of mitzvot, 55 of the Torah's mitzvot contained. We touched upon a fraction of those mitzvot, but I think that we dedicated the show to mitzvot, and therefore I feel it was constructive. I hope you did also. And on that note, I wish you Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov. Well, I should tell you that we bench Rosh Chodesh Elul this Shabbat. Rosh Chodesh will be next Tuesday and Wednesday, Monday night, Tuesday and Wednesday. And that means that Rosh Hashanah, a month later, will be Thursday and Friday. So, again, Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, L'Hishtameah.